And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. Luke chapter 2, verse 10, King James Version. Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, a podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to discuss anything that ended up on the cutting room floor. We're excited to get started today. This is Advent 3.
It is 3.
Which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the Nativity and the focus this, Nativity set. And the focus this weekend was on shepherds.
Yes. So, yeah, it was a great sermon, so I'm really excited to talk about that. But I thought we, real fast, you kind of mentioned, we've talked about this how in every Christmas movie, families and friends treat each other like trash. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I was trying to, so that's a really good question. So I'm trying to think of all my favorite ones. So Elf, are you talking about his father?
Yeah, his dad's not very nice. Home Alone, they're terrible to each
other. Home Alone's awful. Yeah, no, I mean, that's only for the slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I mean, we tell the boys all the time.
Yeah. And like, Charlie Brown, you talk about?
Charlie Brown. That's a.
Yeah.
Those are depressing holiday specials. They really are. Like, every time we watch them, I'm like, why are we. This is not good. They are not. Like, the only reason to watch those with our children is to point out to them behavior that's not acceptable.
Exactly. I feel like I have to. I'm like, okay, that's not nice. And Andy has learned to be like, that was not nice. And I was
right.
Like, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I feel like all the families are just, and then there's like Margo and Todd in Christmas Vacation.
I don't know Margo.
Why is it the carpet wet? I don't know. Oh, so great.
And then even in It's a Wonderful Life, I mean, as awesome as George Bailey is, there are a couple scenes where he's just, I mean, that's my favorite movie of all time. It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, it's not, there's no close second. I've got a top 10 that I could reel off pretty quickly, but I mean, of any movies, not just Christmas movies.
Wow.
But you know, there's that scene where he gets real short with his kids at the, I mean, it's just, you're right. That's a fair point. And maybe it's unintentional. Like, maybe that's the Holy Spirit reminding us to look at the whole reason that Jesus had to come to begin with.
Right.
Right. I mean, the incarnation is about solving the problem of human nature, which is we're oftentimes pretty bad to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely don't show up our best versions at holidays, which you think we would, but I just feel like that's the most conflict and most fighting always happens.
Yeah, that's, well, it's tense, and you're, you know, the whole family dynamic, depending on how healthy your family of origin is.
Yeah, yeah. And you're hyped up on sugar. It's just not good. It's not good. Okay, let's jump into this sermon. So what do you think, when most people hear the word shepherd, what do you think, what picture, like if you were to describe it, what would people picture?
Well, that's a really good question. So I think it depends, like this time of year, or just any time of year, right? So somebody who grows up in the church, I'm sure that it's the beautiful little pastoral figures we have in our nativity sets.
Okay.
Right? The humble shepherd, the noble shepherd, or anybody who's been around the church for a while knows Jesus is the good shepherd, and he's got a lamb draped over his shoulders. Mm-hmm. And, so they often end up as this kind of stand-in for salt of the earth, you know, just humble characters.
Yeah.
Which is not at all what Luke had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, that's what we spent some time unpacking. I mean, the fact that shepherds are in the story, let alone that they are key characters in the story, is a revolutionary thing, which is Luke's whole jam. Right? I mean, he's about overturning.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the gospel to the end. And so the fact that the angel of God appears to the shepherds to tell them first this good news, I guess tell them second after Mary, who also was an outsider. You talked about that last week.
Yeah.
Is a pretty radical thing.
Yeah.
And we probably should spend some time reflecting on that.
Yeah. It was a really thought-provoking sermon because a lot of, you know, I don't think I had really dug deep into what shepherds were at the time, because to be honest, when I think of shepherd, I don't automatically go to the nativity. I think of the classic, like, I feel like every small town Bible church, or just any church for that matter, has like the Jesus that looks like Fabio with like the beautiful hair. And it's got right. the, what we refer to as the Barbara Walters like effect.
Yeah. What like, do you call that?
I think
like the hazy.
The hazy, but we always just call it the Barbara Walters.
Yeah.
But it's just like this beautiful, serene, these golden, good colors. And so automatically, I think that's still entrenched in my mind if that's what a shepherd is. Mm-hmm. Although I know it wasn't necessarily glamorous work, I don't think I really thought about what exactly they do. So do you think there's like a modern day equivalent? You talk about how shepherds just, it wasn't a very, wasn't a high standing job, you know, it was very low.
Yeah. Well, and so, but the reason that we have an inordinately positive view of shepherds in Scripture is because most of the shepherd imagery in Scripture is connected with these really important characters or with God, right? I mean, the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." David was a shepherd first. Abraham, Moses. I mean, these people, shepherding was a central part of the economy. And ultimately, you know, like, Abraham becomes a wealthy, he owned a lot of livestock.
Yeah.
Right. There's a connection, even biblically speaking, in our minds with like a positive connection between the role of the shepherd and the people who normally did that job. Mm-hmm. But just to remind everybody, in case they haven't listened to the sermon, by the first century, these were folks who, like, these were like ex-cons.
Yeah.
To the extent that there were ex-cons in the first century. Okay. These were the people who were not qualified or able to get any other job because it was dirty work. It was dangerous work. It was uncomfortable work. They lived in the fields. They were constantly having to fend off bandits and predators and chase after sheep. I mean, sheep aren't the smartest animals, right? So, and if one goes missing, that's an expense. That's like a capital asset. So you got to go find it.
Yeah.
They were outdoors in all kinds of weather. They ate terrible food. And so the people who had these jobs were not people who had other options. Mm-hmm. I think it's the most sympathetic way to put it. And so this is, I love the question, who would be shepherds today? Because what society does with people who don't have a lot of other options and have these really tough jobs, society now, mm-hmm. the collective we, tends to look down on those folks.
Right.
Right? But my grandfather on my stepfather's side owned a gas station. He was a franchisee for Texaco. And just in an offhanded conversation at the holidays one time, one of my uncles, totally innocently, he wasn't trying to, he didn't intend this to be offensive, but he said something about how he wanted his kids to go to college so they did not end up pumping gas for a living.
Oh.
And my grandmother was deeply offended by that. My grandfather died by that point.
Okay.
Many years before. And it is a memory that is like, this is just burned into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was unintentionally insensitive.
Yeah.
But that's what we do. Like, we have these unconscious biases about what worthy is and what desirable is. I'm doing air quotes. People can't see that on the podcast. And like, if we just carry that thought much farther along, then we realize that that's offensive to people who have those jobs.
Yeah.
So, I try to be as gentle as I can in describing the role of the shepherd in the first century, because I don't mean to be disparaging. Like, I grew up with lots of options. My parents made sure I went to college, and I don't want to be in any way dismissive of folks who don't have a ton of options. Mm-hmm. But the theological point that Luke is making is that those would have been the least likely folks to have gotten a message from God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've been to the Holy Land.
Yes.
So Bethlehem's not that far from.
No.
from Jerusalem.
No, not at
I mean,
all.
It's a drive now, but even then, it's a, you know, it's a few miles. Angel could have showed up at the temple. Like, that would have made a lot more sense.
Right.
Like, there were all kinds of people like you and me, clergy, who were looking for the Messiah, and people in those professions, those callings, whatever, had been looking for the Messiah for years. Those would have been the logical folks to have received the message. We know why Herod would not have been a logical one, right? We get that right. story, and we'll talk about that next week with the Magi. But at least the theologians or the chief priest, like, surely the angel could have appeared to the chief priest, but instead he appears to these ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
They were those who were understood to be ne'er-do-wells by their society.
Yeah.
And Raymond Brown, who wrote what's got to be the definitive commentary on the birth narrative, it's called The Birth of the Messiah. It's a classic. He's the one who where I got the reference that the early rabbis wouldn't even let shepherds be witnesses at a trial because they just were not considered to be trustworthy. And they were not considered to be trustworthy because they were believed to, like, pasture their flocks where they shouldn't have, steal other people's livestock. Like, you know, I mean, they just didn't, people did not have a high opinion of them. So it would have been perceived to be an irony that people who weren't qualified to be witnesses end up getting the message first.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Because it's like God knew they would be the last ones to get the good news. Mm-hmm. So you know what? Let's let you in on the secret. Not even a secret. Let's let you in on the news first.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I love that. It points again to God's heart for those that are on the margins and those that would be forgotten and put aside. Because probably God's thinking is like, there are other people are going to try to keep this news from the shepherds. Mm. So I'm going to let the shepherds know first because I don't trust the rest of you to remember these people.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I love that. So what do you think, why was there a shift of, you know, shepherds being an okay thing? And I'm going to say Old Testament time. Like, do we have any knowledge of why it shifted to be this kind of shameful position to be in?
Yeah, you know, I think it's probably just circumstance. And that's a compelling question. That's probably a PhD dissertation for somebody.
Okay.
if you're looking for a PhD dissertation.
Really. No, I'm good.
You know, maybe it's the case that those biblical figures that were at one point shepherds, quote unquote, graduated to bigger and better things, mm-hmm. whether they were livestock owner, like ranchers, say, the equivalent of ranchers today, as opposed to cowboys, like that would be our comparison here. Like David, in David's case. I mean, even in David's case, he was the runt of the litter. That's why he was taking care of the sheep.
Yeah.
Right. But he ends up being, of course, King David. And the shepherding image of king, like both political and religious leaders, and of course then God in the 23rd Psalm, is kind of an idealized, like the reason that that's an image that's compelling is not because of the merit of the position of shepherd, but because of the relationship between a shepherd and the sheep. So we're sheep, mm-hmm. and we got to have somebody looking out for us.
Yeah.
In real life, we just hire whoever will do that job. But in, like, metaphorically speaking, that it's the relationship that's being described more than the role, I think.
Okay. I do think it's such a good story when we think about the shepherds, these people that we think weren't deserving, you know, especially at the time, people didn't think they were deserving of this news. I think there has been a shift maybe nowadays where, you know, for a long time, you know, you couldn't be anything unless you did go to college. You had to have a degree. And now we're kind of seeing a little shift. And I think that's been really good because I mean, we'll kind of talk about this. I do feel like we're just so obsessed with how we can be better than one another and how we can rank people and put people in different classes. I mean, I might have answered it, but what does that reveal about our human condition?
Yeah, that's a compelling question. So I think that we are constantly, like, a fundamental flaw in human nature is that we feel the need. This is this is Chris talking, not necessarily Methodist doctrine or, you know, Luke or whatever. But we feel this need to compare ourselves to others all the time, all the time, whether it's profession or education or bank account or house or car or whatever. Kids, are you giving your kids the best vacation? Like, you know, I mean, we just do this all the time. And I don't know that it's even a conscious thing necessarily. It's just kind of the way we're wired. And, you know, some of that's probably cultural. You know, we've got an ethos as Americans that we pull ourselves up by our, like when you talk about the quintessentially American story, it's about somebody who started with nothing and ended with a lot, right?
Yeah.
The theological truth, of course, is that God doesn't care about any of those distinctions. God cares about loving God and loving others, however we do that with our lives.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that the nativity scene is one of the most widely recognized religious images in the world. And oftentimes it gets shorthanded to the stable, Jesus, Mary, and the manger, Jesus. Yeah. But when you talk about the whole nativity set, like the whole nativity scene, and we're planning to unpack this a little bit on Christmas Eve, so I hope folks will come to one of those services or tune into one of those services. But you get the Magi, so you get the powerful and the quote unquote lowly.
Yeah, that would not have been interacting with one another.
Please. Right. No, under no circumstances. And the Magi and the shepherds gather at this place where God became one of us. And God didn't become one of us as a king. I mean, he was a king.
Yeah.
Glory to the newborn king. Yeah. But he was born into poverty.
Yeah.
So you get like these ex-cons and these fancy pants astrologers from afar all gathering at a place where God chose the most unlikely way of entering into our experience. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, the theology of the nativity scene is so brilliant.
Yeah.
Unintentionally so, because we're combining stories from two different gospels and all that. But it's all part of the story. And I just, it's like in that scene we get the perfect encapsulation of the elimination of distinctions that humans care way too much about. And God could not care less about. For see, I bring you good news of great joy for all the people. And the words there that are most important are you. I bring you good news for all people, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Whether you're a fancy pants astrologer from the East or you're a shepherd. Like, you almost have to say a shepherd.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think when you picture the nativity, you know, the Holy Family is unique because you've got Mary and Joseph who are peasants for that matter, aren't grand, aren't great. So they, in one way they relate in Jesus being born into that. Them as a whole relate to the shepherds in that way. Cause they're not mighty, but then they're this Holy Family and then they relate to these Magi. Mm-hmm. And so I just think, again, that's the beauty of who Christ is, that can relate to anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think some of us may try to say, no, Jesus only belongs to us because we're this.
Preach.
Or Jesus only, Jesus, you know. And it's like, no, look at the nativity. Mm-hmm. Everyone belongs.
Everyone belongs. Yeah. Everyone belongs. There is no distinction.
Mm-hmm.
That is the message of Christ. That is the message of the Nativity, absolutely. And if anybody is confused about that, they just need to take a deep dive on who shepherds were in the first century, because it's kind of a perfect encapsulation of that.
Yeah. I just wanted to have a little joke when I was thinking about who are the shepherds, and I thought they're the Peggies from Hamilton, right? The forgotten Peggy.
Yeah, right. That's good. That's a good Hamilton reference.
I know. I thought you'd appreciate that. The blah, blah, blah. And the, you know, the Peggy. Doesn't matter. Okay. So clearly, so I just, and modern, you know, I think the church has often decided who is not worthy of hearing a message, mm-hmm. Or doesn't have a place at the table. So talk about who we've done that to.
That's a whole podcast. That's a whole right. podcast series. You know, the church is, and we're talking about the capital C church, like the institution of the church. We've got a long history of over-relating to power, you know? I mean, so once the church became the power structure, then we became much more beholden to human ideas of who belongs and who doesn't. You know, and there's a long, long history of this. I mean, I think of the simple example of people who paid for pews back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Or even like in the beginning, did they speak in like Latin where people didn't understand?
Oh, well, I mean, pre-Reformation Catholicism, priest got his back to the congregation speaking in a language nobody understands.
Right.
So
we've been doing it for a long time.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right. So we draw the distinctions between who can read and who can't.
Yeah.
Who can understand the proper language and who can't? Who has money? I mean, it oftentimes comes down to that. Who has money and who doesn't? And there's an ugly history in the church of that, where, you know, poor people, maybe they got the balcony seat. Maybe they got to receive communion. Maybe they didn't.
Yeah.
The whole history of race in Southern churches in the United States, what churches they were allowed in, and if they were allowed in the church, where they were allowed to sit. We can point to those big examples. Today, who are the outsiders today? Well, that depends on where you are, and it depends on the kind of specific context of your locale, mm-hmm. right? And so I think we probably do draw distinctions among, like, you know, the classic examples would be from inner city churches that are reluctant to change. You know, they were, the big downtown churches that were once the seat of power where the mayor and governor and business leaders all attended. And now it's maybe a multiracial or certainly different socioeconomic group of people in that mission field. Those are the churchy term we use. That the church is reluctant, you know, holding on to the good old days and living off the endowment and not wanting to speak a different language, back to language thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a church service in Spanish. They should speak English, right? I mean, we hear that kind of thing. And then, you know, there's a whole deeper conversation to have around LGBTQ folk.
Yeah.
And that's probably... Again, that would take a long time to unpack. Yeah. For me, what should challenge us about this story is that, and I'm talking about from my perspective as a decidedly upper middle class 50-year-old white guy.
Yeah.
Right? So I am the power structure. Jesus wouldn't have come to me first right now, according to Luke.
Yeah.
I'd be at the temple hearing it last.
Yep.
And so that's a good reminder. Like, Jesus, of course, is for me. And of course, I'm a preacher of the gospel. It's not that I'm excluded. It's that I'm not the most important thing.
Yeah. Ooh, say that again.
And that's hard. That can be hard to accept. I mean, you know, once you're in the power structure, once you're part of the power structure, it can be hard to accept the fact. Like, it's, well, how do I want to put this? I don't think these are intentional things for the most part. Like, I don't think these are intentional intellectual or theological biases that we have. It's just the, like, being part of the institution, being part of the power structure kind of leads you to assume that you're who the power structure's for.
Yeah.
Right. I think the untold story that would be awesome to know, and we can ask this when we get to heaven, the high priest, when Jesus was born, when he finds out the shepherds get the message first, like he's got to be mad.
Yeah.
Like, God, what are you talking? Like, I have devoted my entire life to this, and you're going to go to those yahoos?
Yeah.
They can't even be witnesses at a trial, and you're going to tell them first?
Uh-huh.
Like, that would really make me mad if I was the high priest in the temple that night.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But it's a good reminder, I think. Like, I think the gospel challenges each of us in our social location in different ways. It absolutely challenges all of us. It's absolutely a message for all of us. But we've got to hear both, that it's a message for us, and here's the way it challenges us. Mm. And I think we're way more inclined to lean into the grace, it's for me too, than, okay, yes, for me too, but here's how God wants to challenge me to grow spiritually.
Yeah.
So in Luke's gospel, the powerful are challenged to be a little more humble, and the humble are challenged to claim their place at the table.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean either one of them are better than the other.
Yeah.
It's not what Luke's saying. I think we twist it when we go down that route path.
Right.
Like when we, it's not like the shepherds were exalted figures.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in a lot of cases, they probably were a bunch of yahoos that needed to clean their act up.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they're excluded.
Right.
I love it. Honestly, I could preach on Christmas all year long.
Yeah, I'm a visual person. And of course, you know, I love the Methodist Church having this open table that everyone's welcome. And so when I think about, you know, it's not like the shepherds got two spots at the table. They get to take up two spots, or the magic, you know, like everyone gets an equal spot.
Exactly. And it's not that their spot is at the expense of somebody else.
Yeah.
Because it's that like scarcity bias,
mm-hmm.
that oftentimes leads people to be reluctant to include somebody new.
Yeah.
That if they get theirs, I don't get mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's,
we're not going to put you at the kiddie table.
Right.
The Lord's table has infinite leaves you can put into it, you know?
Yeah, we have a dear friend who we were talking about with child rearing. So, you know, you have your first child and you think, there's no possible way I could ever love another human being more than I love this child. And we were having this conversation with her. She happens to be a therapist. And she's like, yes, that's true. Like, you feel right now like I can't have another kid because there's no way I can love anything in life more than I love this little creature.
Yeah.
And her metaphor was, well, it's not, you don't have to divide up a single pie when you have a second child. You get a whole second pie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a whole new thing. It's a whole, there's plenty of love for all of the children in your life. And it's, but we're wired in such a way that we think there's limits.
Yeah.
On grace and love and resources and prosperity and justice, right? I mean, fill in the blank of the things that are important to us. It's only when we get past that scarcity mindset that we can fully live, like, abundantly, like live the life that God has intended. And so, you know, that's kind of expanding on what Luke is saying with the shepherd part of the story. But I think it's all the same, in the same vein.
Yeah. So the shepherds, you know, they obviously, they left their sheep. So they probably, you know, they took a risk of going. But if you were to imagine, like, what happened after the shepherds saw Christ, like, what do you think happened with the shepherds? Hmm. Have you ever thought about that?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, if they're like most of us, they probably forgot how awesome it was and fell back into their own old ways.
Yeah.
But maybe there was a part of them that was transformed in that encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they lived with more assurance and dignity that they claimed for themselves.
Yeah.
Whatever society was going to say to them.
Yeah.
That's what I want to think happened.
Yeah.
It's a really, it's a powerful moment though, to me. So the Christmas Eve reading, the recommended one every year, is Luke 1-20. And so the first seven verses are the part about getting, you know, they go to the inn, there's no room, baby's born. And then we leave that vignette in the manger or in the stable that with the Holy Family, and the scene cuts to the shepherds in the field. They get this incredible message I think the first part of the miracle is that they respond to it. Because there's plenty of people who hear a message and don't respond to it. Uh-huh. So they go and meet to see him. And when they see him, they see them, Mary and Joseph. And so it's like the moment is in Luke, because the Magi are a different story. These outsiders are going to visit these outsiders to see this incredible thing that God has done for the entire world. Mm-hmm. And there's a great line that probably could be a whole sermon series in itself where Mary, like, she's just kind of overcome by the...
Yeah.
So good. So good. In verse 19, it says, "But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot there to unpack. That, first of all, she had had that message from the angel. And she could have thought a lot about that. Like, you know, and this was your sermon last week. Like, you can only imagine what's going on in her head when the angel visits. And then the baby's born. And she knows that that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And then she gets confirmation from these other folks.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a moment where it's real to her in a new way. Mm-hmm. I mean, having the baby is real enough. But then when these shepherds show up
and are like, "Oh, a baby," you know, like,
and they say, "Here's what God said about the baby." And she's like, "Whoa, wow. Now what?"
Yeah.
And now I've got to raise him.
Right. So now what do I do? But yeah, you think about these shepherds, these really, really like burly, you know, I picture these burly men that have like missing teeth, like just like, you know, and they come and they're in a baby and they're like, "Whoa." And seeing how God can change even the like toughest hearts. I don't know. Yeah. I just think about that. Like, golly.
It's awesome. It's just it's a universe changing story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of talk about how we're wrapping up, but that some people may feel like, you know, it's not for me or I can't be included in this story. So what words would you have for someone who's feeling like an outsider?
So there are plenty of people who, like, judgmental Christians chase a lot of people out of the church.
Yeah.
For a whole lot of reasons. Judgmental Christians keep people from ever considering the church, and then they chase out people who were in the church, and people are judged for any number of reasons. They don't know the Bible well enough, or they don't know the doctrine well enough, or they don't really get it, and they should, and all these people are like holy and serene all around them, and they're like, "How? What is all this?" Or, you know, they're rejected for their sexuality or their socioeconomic level, or, I mean, there's all kinds of ways in which otherwise well-intended Christians chase people away from the church. And I just, to me, the message of the shepherds in particular in this story is that the gospel is for everybody. Because God chose to appear first, to share the message first, after Mary, with the people that society did not consider worthy, did not consider deserving, did not consider qualified. God chose the most unlikely characters to get the good news and told them the gospel is for you, even for you. And I'm using air quotes on the even. Because sometimes that sense of not being worthy is truly foisted on people by others. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just something we put on ourselves.
Right.
You know, sometimes we mishear what somebody tells us, or we don't understand. Like, maybe somebody's not really being all that mean. We just perceive they're being mean, and so we run away. Whether or not it's externally imposed or self-imposed, the message of this story is that the gospel is for everybody. And it does not matter how worthy or unworthy you think you are. It does, literally, it does not matter what you think, because what matters, what actually matters, is what God thinks, and God is clear that the gospel's for everybody.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's incredible. It is.
Okay. Well, I think that's all I have. Such a good sermon. It was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. And we even had a Charlie Brown reference in there, so
I know.
If somebody's not watched the sermon yet, maybe worth checking out if you like Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, am not a fan of Charlie Brown. I know that's blasphemy for some folks.
It's okay.
All right, so we're wrapping up. Next week, we are talking about the Magi. Get that last piece of the puzzle. We are, just over a week till Christmas Eve.
Yay.
The best, that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
It's awesome from here on out. So thanks, friends. I appreciate you joining us for Off Script. It is a pleasure for us to be in conversation with one another over these subjects, and certainly with y'all as well. So until next time, God bless.